You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Louise Penny's novels featuring Chief Inspector Armand Gamache of the Sûreté de Québec have won numerous prizes for crime fiction, including 5 Agatha Awards and 5 Anthony Awards. They're set in the remote village of Three Pines, and although they might seem like cozy mysteries on the surface, they're actually thoughtful examinations into complex questions of morality and human psychology. The latest, The Nature of the Beast from Minotaur Books, looks into a little-known but surprising chapter in Quebec's history, and I'm very pleased that it brings Louise Penny to our show today. Hello.
Hello, Leonard.
Although your novels are crime fiction, they're also, to a large extent, a portrait of small-town life in Quebec. Should I say Quebec or Quebec?
You know, I was just marveling when you described Gamache as the chief inspector of the Sûreté de Québec, and not many people know how to pronounce that, and Quebec. Quebec is how the Francophones in Quebec would describe it. I'm an Anglophone, so I call it Quebec. So, but either is right.
Well, how did you come up with the fictional village of Three Pines?
I started writing or planning this shortly after 9/11. And I was feeling very, like many people, very vulnerable, even though I'm Canadian. But I think the world was feeling that maybe there is no safe place. And it was a shattering experience, clearly, more so for the people here. But I felt I needed a safe place. So when I started writing, I thought, I didn't think the first book would even be published. I was writing it just for me. So I created a place where I felt I would be safe. So that's Three Pines, Quebec, a little village not found on any map.
Because you've invented it.
Well, yes, no, not
even, but even in the book.
Yeah. Even in the book, it's not found on any map, and it's described as only found by people who are lost.
Is it similar to the town that you live in, Knowlton?
Well, I tell my neighbors it isn't, but in fact it is.
And where is Knowlton located?
Good goodness, you know this area. This is unfair. It's Knowlton is very close to the place I'm writing about. I actually live just outside of Knowlton, between two villages. Sutton and Knowlton is where Michael, my husband, and I live. So Three Pines is inspired by that entire area.
This is east of Montreal, of course.
Yes, in an area called the Eastern Townships. It's so close to the Vermont border that we go across to get gas until the Canadian dollar dropped, and now we don't.
Who's Chief Inspector Gamache, and why has he come to live in this tiny village?
Gamache is, as you say, the chief inspector of the Sûreté de Québec, of the homicide. He's, I think, unlike a lot of detectives in crime fiction. He's actually based on my husband, Michael, who was the head of hematology at the Montreal Children's Hospital. Lovely, lovely man, but the doctor you never want to meet. And
The doctor you never want to meet?
Well, because he dealt with children with cancer, often children who were dying. He had to say things to young parents no young parent should ever have to hear. But he would come home. He used to wear bow ties, and on the bow ties he would have balloons and teddy bears, so that when he leaned over these terribly ill children, that's what they would see. But he would come home and he was the happiest man in the world, not because dying children clearly gave him pleasure, but because he understood what a gift life is. And that's what Gamache also understands. He is a joyous man, a happy man, because he sees so much death.
But he's retired from the Sûreté.
Yeah, there was a terrible event, and he took early retirement, and he's now living in this little village.
Do we need to have read the earlier books to understand why he's retired?
I think each book needs to stand on its own, so it's absolutely possible to buy this book without that. I think it's always a good idea to start at the beginning.
But since he's retired, how does that affect his ability to investigate a crime?
Interestingly, not at all. Thankfully for me. Because he knows the people. The crime actually happens just outside the village. He knows it's about a little boy who cries wolf. And Gamache has developed quite a close relationship to this boy. So when the boy disappears, Gamache feels a personal need to investigate.
You don't want me to reveal what the boy has said when he cried wolf?
It's up to you. If you do, I will have to kill you. So it's your call, Leonard.
Three Pines is so remote that, as you said, it's not on any map. And there's no cell phone or high-speed internet service. Are there really such places in Quebec?
What's really embarrassing is that that's exactly where we live. My husband, when he used to speak on the phone, would have to walk to the far end of the pond and put his hand up, which is very difficult to talk on a phone when your hand is 3 feet above your mouth.
Are there advantages to writing crime fiction set in a place where people aren't always connected by smartphones or computers? You actually have to go to their door and knock on it?
Yes, and speak face to face. It also means that while I'm not a complete technical dullard, I am not really as plugged in as perhaps I should be. This was a moment of grace when I was writing these books that I said it was out of cell phone range. So now I don't have to rely on technology.
In these books, we meet the residents of Three Pines, an elderly poet and her pet duck, an acclaimed painter, retired psychologist turned bookseller, a gay couple who run the local bistro and B&B. I'm assuming they're also not all based on your husband.
Well, the mad poet with the duck a little. No, they're not. And they are based roughly, they're inspired by people I know. These books are about many things, probably least among them death, but they're definitely inspired by the people in, they're love letters to where I live.
This is the 11th novel in the Gamache series. It's part of the challenge of writing a series that you have to come up with new things about your recurring characters?
Definitely is. I'm very aware of the fact that you don't want to inadvertently write the same book over and over. You don't want to fall into a formula. So yes, for me, because I write about the same location and the same characters, that is a very real danger. For me, each book is about a different theme, and so they're exploring different areas of themselves.
We also get detailed descriptions of the landscape, the food served in the local bistro, which sounds pretty good. Why is food so important in your books?
Did not get that by just looking at me, Leonard. I love to eat. But
have you encouraged tourism in the area as a result of these books?
There are actual tours now in the area based on the places inspired by the books. In Quebec City, where one of the books is set, there's a tour called Bury Your Dead in Quebec City.
You write in English, but should we assume that the people in your books are speaking the Quebecois dialect of French?
Yes, and the books are now translated into French, and there's a publisher in Quebec, but also one in France. And when it came to having them published in France, I insisted that they be translated into Quebecois, which is a different language than French. I mean, it's obviously very, very similar, but there are differences.
Well, I promise you that I wouldn't mention that this book opens with the disappearance of this local boy, Laurent Lepage, who's known for telling tall tales. By the way, the name of the book is The Nature of the Beast, the latest of the Chief Inspector Gamache series by Louise Penny. But the story also turns out to involve an engineer and arms designer named Gerald Bull. Was there a real Gerald Bull?
There was. This is something I found out in the mid-90s, but he himself was a Canadian, an arms dealer, an arms designer. He worked, a very mysterious figure who ended up being assassinated, they figure by Mossad, in Brussels in the early 1990s.
And that's because he was designing armaments for Saddam Hussein?
That's right.
Scud missiles?
Not Scud missiles. He actually did design Scud missiles, but he took it the next step. And what he wanted to do was design the biggest artillery piece in existence that would fire something into the lower Earth's atmosphere, including a nuclear weapon. And he built a prototype in Quebec.
That was his connection to Quebec? Was he living there?
He was Quebec. He was actually a Torontonian, but he was working in Quebec, and there was actually a prototype of this built in Quebec.
Is this a well-known story in Canada?
No, not at all. It's becoming slightly, it's out there. There's some books about it, but it's certainly not well-known, and certainly people in the area who worked on the project are in no big rush to talk about Gerald Bull. Even though he's dead, he was such a strong personality and people so fearful of what he was doing that even today people don't want to talk about him.
How did you research the story? You have had a background in journalism.
Yes.
So did you apply that?
I did. Well, I heard about it first when I was a journalist, and a colleague mentioned it, and it was so extraordinary I didn't believe him. And then when I quit work and ended up writing these books, I had that in the back of my mind as a possible story. But how do you tell a story that is unbelievable and yet make it believable? And so it took me a while before I found out how to really, really do it.
You were at the CBC as a broadcast journalist before you started writing books. Why did you give up journalism to write fiction? Or were you finding that you were writing fiction in when you were working as a journalist?
I got burned out. I don't know if you ever feel like that. I was tired. I had covered enough disasters and enough politics. The Quebec referendums, which were very emotional, and the last one almost led to Quebec separation, and that was extremely difficult. And I got tired of the worldview, of seeing the world as a dangerous place filled with unpleasant people.
Although you have a few of them in
that's
books.
A difficult section. How another, do I go from that to murder?
Another thread in the plot here involves a local theater group, which is putting on a play written by a notorious murderer, and it spurs a debate about whether we should consider the character of the artist when we're judging a work of art.
I find that such an interesting discussion. Can you separate the creator from the created? Wagner is, of course, the classic.
Or Celine. There's a whole bunch.
Yes, exactly. How do you... I know, I think, what the correct answer probably is, and the correct answer, I suspect, is no, you shouldn't. What was created should stand on its own, unmarred by whatever the creator does. But I, as a human being, can't. I don't want to cook something from the Stalin family cookbook.
Listen to Wagner?
You know, that's more a musical choice than anything else. But I understand that choice.
Your books have been compared to those of P.D. James, Agatha Christie, Georges Simenon, among others. I don't really see Agatha Christie here, but...
Thank you.
Well, she was a great writer, but a different sort of writer.
That's right. And I think of her almost as a kind of a godparent who is, you know, help guiding, but certainly these are not Christie-esque.
And yet people, because they're set in a tiny village, people immediately think of her.
They do. It's a literary shorthand that I think is facile, and I think it's unfair. I actually prefer the P.T. James, obviously, examples. But I think anything set in a village now, people tend to think that if you live outside of a major city, you've left your brain in the city. And I was raised, I was born, I worked in major cities all my life. I have met extraordinary people who choose to live in small villages.
You have spoken about the fact that while you were writing this book, you were caring for your husband, Michael, who was diagnosed with dementia. How has that experience affected your writing?
Well, it certainly has affected my writing day now. The book before this was very difficult to write because it was all... He had just been diagnosed. We were in some turmoil, obviously. Pieces were falling off of him, and I was very upset. I was trying to do it all right and look after him and be there for him, and it was in chaos. Now it's easier because he's reached the stage where he almost isn't there anymore. And he's a very happy man. He has one of the, I'm very blessed with this dementia that he's remains a happy man, a calm man, not anxious at all. So now I get up very early. I get up at 5. I write for about 5 hours all by myself. I'm quiet. I have the baby monitor on in case he needs me. And I go up and check on him every now and then. But that's my time. And then once he gets up, then I can set it aside. So my day is very compartmentalized now.
Is there a 12th Gamache book in the works?
There is. I'm about two-thirds of the way through it. Yeah.
And I'm assuming you're going to continue writing about him for a long time?
The interesting thing is that I created this village and these characters and the main character as a way to comfort myself after 9/11. And now I find it comforting me in my husband's dementia. It's the place I go, my safe place.
I'm sure that winning all the awards that you've won hasn't hurt either.
I hate to say, half of the awards I created and then give to my... I just won the Leonard Lopate Award.
Did you?
Thank you. Well, it does help. It's very... it's a nice reassurance.
Louise Penny is the number one New York Times and Globe and Mail best-selling author of 10 previous Chief Inspector Amon Gamache novels. And now we have the 11th, The Nature of the Beast. It is published by Minotaur Books. And I thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you, Leonard.